Welcome to the Holden Village Podcast. Holden is a community of education, programming, and worship located in the remote wilderness of the Cascade Mountains. These snapshots provide a glimpse into the learnings taking place in our community. Let's tune in to this week's highlight.
Hi, I'm David Westerland. I use he, him pronouns. Been coming to Holden since 2008 when I came with my daughter, who was six at the time. Mm-hmm. And we were visiting friends Bob and Laura Norton, who are here on year-round staff. And I live in Bellingham, Washington, when I'm not living at Holden. But on the ferry ride up here, I realized this is my 10th time that I've been here. And it always feels like time slows down when I'm here, which I love. One of the times when I was here with my daughter, I think she was about nine, and just really cherishing time with her. And the 1 week felt like 2.5 weeks. So professionally, what I do, I'm a consultant and a facilitator and a coach. And I'm also, this is probably what many of us do, just observing life and noticing where we're at, especially in these times, now in the summer of 2021 and with the pandemic happening the last 16 months and racial issues coming more to the fore for a wider group of people. So many different things. I feel like I'm asking the question, what's the opportunity now? And what do we need to learn as humanity? What do we need to learn in the organizations where we work, in the church, in your faith community? What do we need to learn? Like, what's the opportunity? And what are the skills we need to learn so that we are prepared to face uncertainty, to face what's unfolding, because we don't know what's coming, right? Some people said there's a pandemic coming, the wise people that we didn't listen to, right? But most of us weren't prepared for everything that happened. So I've thought about what's the difference between planning, almost getting too analytical and planning everything, but then you can't always, you know, something else happens you didn't plan on, and so you have to throw the plan out the window. How do we look at differently, like how do we prepare ourselves? Who do we need to become to face the uncertain future? There's a guy named Sam Wells who wrote a book called Improvisation, The Drama of Christian Ethics. I may have quoted this last time I did a podcast, but he starts the book by saying improvisation in the theater is where actors seek to develop trust in themselves and one another to conduct unscripted dramas without fear. And his book is a study of how the church can become a community of trust in order to faithfully encounter the unknown of the future without fear. The question, whether it's in the church, our communities, our organizations, who is it we need to become and how do we develop those skills? So, because I feel like the COVID is going to be one of many things we'll be facing in future years, you know, with climate change, things already happening, so many things that we're going to have to face. So who do we need to become to face those things with agility, with kindness, with wisdom? My sessions this week are on four different things. One, resilience. How do we develop and cultivate resilience for navigating complex times? A session I did yesterday and Wednesday was on fear. Particularly, it was called Dancing with Fear, shifting our relationship with the things that keep us up in the night. And we did a process, part of the workshop, developed by Linda Berry called Tiny Monsters or Tiny Demons, where actually we used a different part of our brain and we divided our paper into four quadrants, drew a squiggle in one quadrant, that's a technical term, squiggle, a three-sided shape in another quadrant, a four-sided shape in another quadrant. The last quadrant, I just said, go wild, okay? And then you take all those shapes and forms and make each of them into monsters. Just horns, teeth, fangs, whatever, just some monster. And before that part of the exercise, we had dialogue in dyads and triads about what are the fears you're facing in your life right now? And we did like three rounds of talking with people and shared those things, put up post-its on the wall so we got to see how, oh wow, I'm not the only one with that fear. And then we picked our top four fears and matched them to these monsters. So if I have a fear of being alone, I would match that to a particular monster and then name that fear. I'll just say like Lonely Joe or something. And then what we ended up doing is pick one of them that you want to shift your relationship to and then redraw it dancing and give it a new name, right? And so many times someone said too, just externalizing that fear and drawing it helped her get some distance from that fear that felt often so enslaving in a sense. So that was yesterday, fear. Today we're going to deal with grief. I think during this time of COVID, there have been so many layers of loss. Just, I mean, knowing all the lost lives around the world and here in the US, but also, you know, businesses closing, even just something, you know, if you used to frequent a cafe and it's not there anymore, that's a loss. Smaller loss than someone dying, but when we have all these losses piled on top of one another and we're not facing them, we hold that inside, even if we're not facing it. We definitely need counselors, spiritual directors, pastors, rabbis, spiritual leaders. We need to tap into social support when we've gone through loss. So today we're doing a process called grief walking. It's a very simple process, and I've found it to be very powerful. I've actually led it on Zoom about 5 times over the past 9 months, where basically I invite people to share about a loss. And I say, usually something small or medium, not the most profound loss. This isn't a therapy session. Part of what I'm wanting to do is teach people this process so they can replicate it and share it in their communities. So we're all writing on 4 sentence stems. So this is even something listener to the podcast now could write about this and do this with friends and loved ones. The first prompt is, after you thought brought to mind a loss that you've gone through, yes, it's true that ... So yes, it's true that my daughter left to college and I'm feeling really sad about that. I had people write for 1 minute, just whatever comes up in 1 minute. And their paper's in 4 quadrants, so you have a quadrant for each prompt. The next prompt is, it is hard because. And I might say, it's hard because my daughter and I have a great relationship and now I'm an empty nest and I'm still in COVID and I'm so excited for her, but I miss her. And then the next quadrant is, I will always remember, or I will never forget. I'll always remember times of playing rummy with her. And I'm even feeling the emotion now of just feeling my relationship with my daughter. And then the fourth quadrant is, when I have shared my grief, it may be possible to. I love any sort of prompts or questions on possibility. So the first three are saying, come from the world of improv and applied improv. And one of the big things in improv is yes and. So there's actually a yes and structure in these 4 prompts. Yes, I have gone through something hard. Or yes, it's true that. That's the first one. And yes, it is hard. And so often we don't even give ourselves permission to face the reality of. So saying yes doesn't mean we like it. It just means, yes, this has happened and I'm facing it. And then, yes, I will always remember this. I will never forget. And when I have shared my grief, it might be possible to, I'll just make this up right now, to mentor someone so that I have that relationship with someone who's my daughter's age as she's off in Colorado at college. Or when I've shared my grief, it may be possible to connect with other parents who are going through something similar of their kids going to college. So that's just the first part of the process of those 4 writing prompts. Then I ask for someone to volunteer to be a grief walker, and there's different stations and they're invited to share their prompts 1 at a time. And if someone who's surrounding them resonates with that, Jonah, if you were a grief walker and you shared your prompt and someone resonates with what you're saying, they would say, Jonah, I will walk with you. And they'll put their hand on your back and walk with you to the next station. And then someone else, after you read the next prompt, will walk with you to the next. When you do it on Zoom, everyone turns their camera off except for if I'm the guide or facilitator and the grief walker, we have our cameras on. And then if someone resonates, they turn on their camera, they come off mute, and they would say, Jonah, I will walk with you. Even just that was super powerful when I was a participant in it. And then we go around and people would say then, Jonah, I chose to walk with you because. And when I did this back in August 2020, someone said, well, I chose to walk with you, David, because I remembered when my dad took me to college and it was the first time I saw him cry. He gave me a letter. So it's this wonderful experience. And then I'll share, if I was the grief walker, here was what my experience was like as a grief walker. So it's a pretty simple process, but it's really powerful. Like doing that together, whether it's on Zoom or in person, just having that structured space for people to share, this is what I've gone through. And then there's a few more prompts. I realize even for people who are just observing and just have done the writing and they're not grief walking or accompanying, things come up. So I have prompts like, so what's come up for you? Write for a minute on that. How do you normally deal with grief and loss? And I remember thinking when I was writing on that prompt, how do I normally deal with that? And what came to me in the moment is, well, I walk by the water, or that would be helpful. And who can you call? Who can you talk to, and when can you call them? Just to sort of, as grief has come up, how do I help as the facilitator people to take the next step? We're not solving grief. I don't think we ever solve grief, but we can move through it together. So that's today. And then tomorrow, the fourth session is on joy. And so we'll do a lot of applied improv exercises. I think we have a need for joy in this time. I think joy can be a fuel for us. And I also think that joy comes when we connect with each other. And joy, I mean, Walter Brueggemann, who's a favorite theologian of mine, he says, grief is our route to newness. So how can even going through grief help us to become more liberated, to feel the joy? I mean, I really believe we all have joy inside us, and even inside groups or organizations, there's a collective joy that's latent. So the question is, how do we tap into that? And really, all my work, even outside of Holden with organizations, be it nonprofits, companies, churches, government, schools, it's about how do I facilitate meaningful engagement and sometimes playful engagement to unlock hidden resources. Because imagine an organization where no one talks to each other, or no, everything is siloed. I find so many companies, people are siloed, groups are siloed. When you begin to talk to each other and listen, you start unlocking resources just through the talking and listening. Oh, I mean, how many times has this happened at Holden where you run into someone, oh yeah, I meant to talk to you about this. And you discover something about them you didn't know. And that unlocks something new. So I was just in a session with Raisa Tolchinsky, who's a poet who's here this week, and great session. And grief. Yeah. We all go through loss of so many micro and macro ways. Yeah, it's life. I mean, even the loss of we see it in the seasons, the leaves fall, there's death, and there's rebirth, right? The question is, what do we do with the loss? Do we grieve it? Or what are other options we could have with loss? We could ignore that it's happening, could suppress it. And the reality is too, I was telling someone, this might be a story for another podcast, but 2010, I mistakenly ate poison hemlock. Could have killed me. And it was humorous too. It has this neuromuscular toxin called conine that can stop your heart and diaphragm suddenly. It was growing in my garden. April, I came back from a run. I saw these volunteer onions, what I thought was a volunteer carrot. I'm like, oh, God is providing this just volunteer food that comes up spontaneously. No idea that poison hemlock grows in, this is what the online, what the internet says, in waste places. So it grows near garbage cans for some reason. So it was the first year I'd had a garden, and seeds had blown in that didn't have a place to land before. And in around April, it looks just like a carrot. It ends up getting bigger. And now I know the difference between a carrot. The carrot has a little bit of a hairy stem. Poison hemlock is smooth, and poison hemlock has purple splotches on its green stem. So if you see a smooth stem with purple splotches, stay away from it. I just thought, oh, it's an heirloom carrot. And I was sharing the garden with my neighbor. And so I thought, oh, she planted carrots. So anyways, I fermented it. Friend had taught me, we'd learned about fermenting food, sauerkraut, kimchi. So 6 days later, I ate some. I live in Bellingham, so I'm driving south on Chuckanut Drive, where there's drop-offs. I was going south to the right. My eyes weren't tracking. They were delayed. Started getting tremors. Got down to my friends in Skagit County. Just the day before, she had gone on a 4-H hike with her kids, and the leader had pointed out poison hemlock, because I hadn't put it all together. That this was what was even happening to me. I just felt You know when you feel ill and you don't want anybody to move, you just feel frail. That's how I was feeling. And so we called poison control. They're like, you need to get your friend to a hospital right away. And I'm looping back to why this story came up. The hospital didn't do much for me. There was like 8 different people who came in and asked me the same questions, and they sent me home 4 hours later. The tea shop in Bellingham, shout out to Wonderland Tea on Railroad Avenue. Linda, the owner, has owned it for 40 plus years. She knows so many things about teas and spices. Mm-hmm. She's like, you need to not purge your liver right away. There's so much toxin in it. You need to strengthen it. Take this milk thistle and to slowly titrate those toxins. So this comes back to all the grief we've gone through, maybe in our lives, but especially the last year and a half. I don't think we can deal with it all at once. There's so much. So how do we have supportive environments to deal? So even in grief walking, the founder of this larger field called Liberating Structures, Keith McCandless, he led grief walking in August when I did it. And he said, don't pick the most profound loss you've gone through. Something small or medium, which are, they're still loss. Part of it, just experience the structure and to, even just to begin to open up to grieving a loss is work. It's heavy work. I like thinking of the opposite of, if we don't grieve, what are we going to do with it? There's mm-hmm. loss that's mm-hmm. there. That reminds me of a story when I used to work at Tierra Nueva, and the founders, Bob and Gracie Ackblad. Bob used to come speak at Holden. He's in the audio archives mm-hmm. back probably when he had big hair. When I first started going there before I was staff, I had gone through a difficult divorce in 2005. And I remember going to this, they had a healing service. And I remember the music there. I was a lot of tears and a lot of pain that I had gone through. And this woman, Tina, who unfortunately passed away from cancer about 10 years ago. But I remember Tina sort of kneeling next to me and saying very humbly, but clearly, would you consider forgiving your former wife? And I had shared some of my story. And I remember laughing out loud. It just felt ridiculous at the time. And then slowly, I come back once a month to Tierra Nueva to a class there and receive prayer from people, healing prayer, and just caring, listening people. It was Mother's Day of 2006, I want to say. Maybe it was 2007. Maybe it was 2007. I wrote my former wife a letter saying, I forgive you and bless you and want God's mercy and grace to pour out over you. And it was just this huge release of, I'm talking about two things here. I think there's grief, and then there's me that was holding on to some bitterness and unforgiveness. Mm-hmm. But I think there might be cousins. And out of that time, I ended up creating a children's book that spring, like a month or two later. But I think I only was able to do that because I had freed up that energy mm-hmm. that was holding on to this bitterness and unforgiveness. Mm-hmm. And the book was called Simone Goes to the Market, and my daughter Simone. And I just self-published it in Bellingham, but ended up selling like 500, 600 copies, got to meet farmers, and it was a book about the farmer's market. So what's the potential when we do work through our loss with others and grieve? What's made possible? Mm-hmm. One last thing, maybe to wrap up, an exercise, a well-lived life. I don't think I've ever said this, but we can hold gravity and levity. There's the heavy things of life, and also we need both levity. If it's only levity, we're probably avoiding. And if it's only gravity, we're going to, at least for me, I would just be weighed down too much, right? So I find a lot of levity through improv games, and we're going to do a lot of improv tomorrow in the session on joy. This is a game that listeners can play. It's called Bumper Sticker. I played it a ton on Zoom this past year. It's in the family of word at a time games. So Joan and I are going to create a bumper sticker one word at a time. And whenever either of us or both of us feel like it's the end of the bumper sticker, we say, stick it. And for the listener, the audio only, I'm sticking my hand out like I'm pressing a bumper sticker against the car. Fun side note, I met a faculty from Belfast, Ireland a couple years ago, at David Campton, David and Sally. And I had a birthday Zoom with about 25 people this last year. And when I was explaining this game, David and Sally were laughing. I'm like, why are you laughing? And they're like, well, over here, if you say stick it, it has a different meaning. It means stick it where the sun don't shine. But anyways, so that's how we play the game. So word of time, when it feels like the end of the bumper sticker, we say stick it. Okay. I'll start the first one. Okay. Never
try
to
eat
toast
without
butter. Stick it.
Good.
Nice. Yeah. You want to start one?
Okay. Today,
I
found
a
gem
of
an
inspiration.
Stick it.
Leave the listener curious. What was that gem of inspiration? Play bumper sticker with your friends and loved ones. My website is bepresentdiscoverjoy.com. So that's four words, B-E, present, discoverjoy.com. My occasional blog that I want to start doing more regularly is there. Find more about the work I do. And my email is david@bepresentdiscoverjoy.com. It's always a delight to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.